Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey, kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling, too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. It is the day after Thanksgiving. I do not have leftovers. I'm thankful for that, even though, you know, it was a good dinner. But, you know, I went out of town for it. Chris, you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did have a good Thanksgiving. It was nice to go and spend time with my family. The people we had over for Thanksgiving, like family, friends or whatever, were chill. And I have been working on a lot of music. I got to do recording stuff the night going into Thanksgiving Eve, so all the way up until midnight, and then I was up way too late remixing. And no, I took this old song of mine, and this is kind of a new thing for me. I took the old song and completely redid the mix to match a current song that I'm working on, because I like this current song, and I think that this other song, I was hearing it, well, this would sound like a good pairing to this other song, but I have to completely rework the mix. So I got to spend several hours reworking the mix, which to some people might sound like work, but like to me is like what I want to do with my life. So it was awesome. It was really cool.
I went to Scottsdale, and my parents and my aunt and uncle also live in Scottsdale. So we went to their house. A little more bougie than my parents are. They are about the whole thing. But one of my cousins was also there. I have two cousins, and both have families. And one of the cousins made it this year with both his boys, who are now age 4 and 6. And I remember this time in my life when you'd go to dinners with strange people and you wouldn't want to talk to anybody at first. And then eventually you warm up to them. Kind of happened here.
Wait. You grew out of that, is what you're saying.
I might have grown out of that. I don't know. I drink now, so at these functions, so that helps a bit.
I'm working on that still. It's a growth thing. It's a growth point.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, they weren't talkative at first, but then I'm moving chairs to the table, and they're these big heavy wood chairs with like the vinyl covering a little part of it within the frame. And they've started to warm up a bit. Like the night started with one of the kids hustling my mom at a educational card game. It's like, do you draw one card at a time? No, you draw 10. He's just cheating, hustling my mother. But I'm moving the chairs, and I put one at the table. It's just me and the two boys. They kind of give this grinnish, you know, devilish look in their eye, as if they've discovered something. You go, know what we call these chairs? Go, what? Call them the fart chairs. I go, what? Yeah, because they make these fart noises. They ran their hand across the vinyl, and then they just start making fart noises and start laughing hilariously. And like, this is the best audience I will ever have. I don't know what's going on, but grandma comes and goes, did you teach him that? I'm like, no, I swear to God, I didn't teach him this. I was getting framed for and just the rest of the night with the two around me. I'm just like, this is what I'm becoming. I'm just looking at my mom going, this is not my fault. I swear to you, I did not teach these children about fart chairs or whatever they're doing. Are you there?
I'm here. I'm just like, I'm trying to think, like, why didn't you?
I don't know. I was trying to play the straight man, actually, to them. I'm like, oh, those chairs don't really fart.
So you're egging them on.
Almost,
or actually? What I just feel like I got was a bit of a confession.
Well, no. After dinner, a couple Jack Daniels in, it's like Jeff just would go, well, just everybody would start doing it. After Jeff had a couple cocktails, he started egging on the kids, much to the parents' chagrin. But other than that, I was pure, Chris. I was good. I was a good boy. I behaved. I got a cookie after I got home. and this note, Shane Haste, after being cut, wrote, all jokes aside, I got nothing to be mad about. I had a financially great run, met some cool people, traveled, and had plenty of laughs. I have some great stories to tell in the future. And then it should have been written in crayon. And thanks to Chris Novembrino and all the other little slapjacks.
No, for their support. The slap jackalopes is our name. And I hope one day I meet this man and I tell him that there's no one on this planet who's more of a fan of that slapjack gimmick than I was.
One of those weird business, getting into the news now, one of those weird business stories that just kind of pops up that would look of interest to both Chris and myself. Chris, I'm going to read you this. You tell me what smells a little about this story. The terms of former WWE Chief Financial Officer Christina Salen's separation agreement were made public today. In an SEC filing, WWE revealed that they had come to terms with Salen on November 23rd. Under the deal, she will receive 1 year's salary and continue to receive health benefits for 1 year. Additionally, Salen will receive a cash payment estimated at $413,000 for forfeited stock units and will also be eligible for a bonus with a current estimated worth of $431,200 at the WWE Board of Directors' discretion.
Okay, so there are things that color this speculation that you and I know on background for months on end that I like really can't bring into this next piece of opining. But the details of this to me, given that background that I am privy to, scream a sexual harassment issue that we're trying to keep quiet.
I was thinking something along those lines, or she knows where a body is buried, because given the Oliver Luck lawsuit, where there was no kind of compensation given, it's dirty. This is awfully generous for a WWE firing. That's
especially given the climate of how most of these firings are done too.
Yes.
This sticks out like a sore thumb compared to other releases and departures from the company.
I will give you a non-cynical path here. She just negotiated a hell of a contract with stock options so that they had to pay her, and that if she was fired within a certain amount of time, that she was eligible for compensation and year-end bonuses. That's perfectly acceptable to me. But
it would have been very impressive to negotiate. Like, yeah, I mean, I would like to believe that, because it would say something extremely shrewd about her competency level. But it just seems like she wouldn't have had sufficient leverage coming in to negotiate that strong of a contract.
Right. Few other things. Scott Garland, 48, best known as Scotty Too Hot, asked for his release this week. He had been working at the coach at the Performance Center. When announcing, he said if it ever came to where he was working for WWE just for a paycheck, he would leave. And that's what happened. Interesting. People get burned out. Anything?
Why now? It feels like the WWE system for the last 2 years has been in this sort of holding pattern.
I'm guessing it's just not wanting to deal with like this next gen NXT 2.0 type thing. You know, it was formerly a finishing school and now it's an actual build from the ground up type school.
Sure. You know?
Johnny Gargano signed a 1 week contract extension to his deal that was to expire on December 3rd, will now expire on December 10th. The key is that the next major show is December 5th, so Gargano has agreed to work through a conclusion of his current program. He is still in talks with WWE about signing a new deal, but obviously by not signing the offer deal and only signing a one-week extension, he is also willing to entertain outside offers. Me in parentheses. It's called leverage. Candice LeRae's contract would expire in May, but the belief is that they will add at least from the period of time she was taken off television until the period she returns due to pregnancy as a contract freezing period. And if they do that, that's going to wind up a long time into the future and probably well into 2022. Interesting. No, it's just, look, he's doing kind of the Adam Cole gimmick here. You know, I've agreed to run the string out until the last program is done, and then I'm going to exercise my options here. I think that's smart.
So how long is Gargano's contract?
Up until December 10th.
Okay, so this guy's got, by my count, about 14 days left on his contract.
Correct.
14 days to learn where the hard camera is. Do you think he can do it?
And to do the shocked face when somebody kicks out it too. You know, the level 4 shocked face. He needs to get that under control, Chris.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, look, I feel like the writing's on the wall here and Johnny's done, but maybe he gets a fairly lucrative offer to just kind of stay in this holding pattern.
I kind of think that too, and I kind of think he wouldn't mind.
Here's the other problem.
He's not motivated like Bryan Danielson to be, you know, the greatest wrestler of all time, blah, blah, blah. I think he just wants to make money and have a family.
AEW's a crowded boat. It's a very crowded ship right now, and it doesn't necessarily do him a world of good to go and end up in the mid-card in AEW either. It's really a question of if the money's right. It seems like either way, he's going to be in the middle of the show. He's not going to be featured as a top guy. I don't know that he cares about being a top guy. As you said, like, Candice and he are starting a family. They like to go to Disney. It seems like this guy's next 15-year trajectory is, you know, increasing dad activities, more trips to Disneyland, maybe school stuff. Unless in ring over time.
Let me throw this at you, because yes, he is at that point now where he's kind of in the prime of his career, you could say. I mean, in terms of being able to go physically in the ring and having also the experience to build great matches, et cetera, but he is the face of NXT in many ways. He was Johnny Takeover in many ways, Takeover now gone from all the branding on NXT War Games. So that's part of the next future. There is no
William. So then what is Johnny? If he can't be Johnny Takeover, what does Johnny Takeover mean?
Well, here's what I'm going to put to you. There is no William Regal now. There is no Samoa Joe. What if Johnny Gargano becomes the figurehead of NXT?
Feels like putting Macho Man on commentary.
Yes, it does. But that's their, I mean, they've said that he's basically aging out here. I don't know. It's interesting to think about. I think, see, it's weird because I think he fits in perfect in the WWE system of doing goofy comedy and sketches and like that, as opposed to what AEW is trying to do. Not that he wouldn't fit in AEW. That's not what I'm saying.
And he would be a total great mid-card character actor for this company.
Yes.
Yeah, like if they wanted to use him on the main roster. And he has underdog likability status and workhorse status. They would never do this. But, like, it's not inconceivable that, like, Johnny Gargano, in a company that was more mindful, catches underdog fire on a main roster with the proper presentation. Like, you could tell an underdog Daniel Bryan type of story with this guy. He's a good enough worker to do it.
Finally, with his tag team match, Randy Orton set the record for the most pay-per-view matches in WWE history with 177. He had been tied with Kane going into the show at 176. Congrats. Here's a plaque.
Would have been great if Kane had showed up at the pay-per-view to keep Orton out of the match, just as like the most pointless angle ever.
it's like those old football players who really just want to be the guy to hold on to that record and never want to give it up, and you get to see them seething in the crowd.
That would be a way better mystery than the egg, right? Like, before the match, Orton is backstage, his knee is like busted up. We don't know who attacked Orton. Riddle is an idiot and tries to be a detective to try to solve the mystery of who killed Randy Orton. And we discover that it's Kane because Kane doesn't want Orton to ever compete in another pay-per-view match ever.
Let's talk some ice cold Survivor Series takes, since that's a good transition for it. Annual Big Four pay-per-view run by the WWE was a one-match show, period. Charlotte and Becky, pretty damn good match. They have very good chemistry. They played into the drama of this. And then you could have shut the whole damn show off because nothing else mattered. Now, that said, your boy, Jeff Hawkins, at Crap Game 13, you got in a bit of trouble this week on the old Twitterverse from, let's just say, WWE simps, some of whom have blue check marks. Because I said this, Chris, in the lead up to Survivor Series, they had renamed the Battle Royal the Rock 25th Anniversary Battle Royal. The media blitz was all sorts of WWE superstars cosplaying as The Rock. If you don't pay attention to Twitter, you thought The Rock was probably going to show up at this show, especially with the Netflix tie-in of his movie being there. They had laid the groundwork for it. And I got, well, they never really said he'd be there, did they? It was a bait and switch, kids.
It was ludicrous. You name battle royal after The Rock, and at the end of that battle royal, the inherent expectation, it's implicit, sure.
Well,
but the expectation is something like...
They changed it a bit with the Pizza Hut sponsorship, I believe.
Gotcha. But then when they set it up, okay, they changed it a bit. The day off,
yes,
Jeff.
Yes, the day off. The day off. Yes,
yeah, okay, yeah. Going back to bait and switch. Yeah. You got baited with The Rock and switched with Pizza Hut. Holy crap, that's a horrible deal. But beyond that, I mean, Pizza Hut, these are like squares or wheels of garbage. Anyways, the point being, The Rock. You create The Rock Battle Royal, the implied mindset of someone showing up before they know that it's going to be Pizza Hut and whatever they're doing is that at the end of this battle royal, something like The Rock coming out and shaking the hand of the person who won the battle royal and maybe that leading up to an angle, that's something like the expectation. Instead, what we got is sort of like a silly WWE sort of coherent booking, versus regular.
We got an egg. We got an egg from the movie for a Netflix crossover is what we got. No, Jeff, you should have known because The Rock's in Australia filming Young Rock. So if he
but Jeff, here's the thing about that egg. That egg does tremendous ratings, I've been told.
That egg is gonna go all elite. No, it's Jeff, you should know. I knew he was filming Young Rock in Australia. I knew he'd have to quarantine for a week if he came back. And that
it's
was
not about
impossible.
Knowing, it's right? Not, it it's has not about nothing, knowing. It has everything to do with what you're doing in terms of expectation setting.
It has
setting.
Nothing to do with The Rock, as a matter of fact, other than the fact that they were implying his presence. The Rock's interest in this has nothing to do with it. I'm talking about what WWE did to set the expectations for a show that nobody had any interest in because there were no stakes. The stakes were never lowered. There were no titles on the line. There was no brand supremacy. F that. Nobody gives a crap.
The brand war this year, I mean, it's always been laughable. This year was perhaps the most pathetic attempt at a brand war ever. And what the whole Rock thing was an attempt to juice some sort of numbers going into the pay-per-view and some sort of numbers coming out of the pay-per-view. That maybe, just maybe, The Rock was going to show up and start some sort of angle with Roman Reigns. But he's not, because the whole angle is built around Brock Lesnar. So it was really, really egregious. It was very egregious.
And I think, I listened to the flagship earlier today as I was at the airport, and Joe Lanza had a very good point about Big E and his treatment here. And this was something we've been on a lot too. We said Big E as champion needs to be something else other than New Day with a belt. And he hasn't been anything else. And you know who said he wasn't going to be that, or who said it was okay to be that? Big E did on Talking Smack all those times. Well, this is how I got here, blah, blah, blah. And I think Joe has a very good point. Number one, about, look, it's obvious. Roman Reigns basically squashed him for 3/4 of the match and then pinned him clean. Sure, he got a bit of a comeback there, but whoopty crap. You know, he has a very good point about how the fans are kind of reacting to this, but I don't think he's quite on target with it, because it's twofold. It's not just WWE fans have really bought into this legacy thing, and how, yes, if you get a title, it means you're important. It means they like you. It means, the only people who titles are important are the people they tell you. And that's where Joe is correct. But there's another aspect to the Big E title reign, and that's also, good God, we don't want what happened to Kofi to happen to Big E here and him to be irrelevant because he is a black man and he's a black champion. And so what happens is they buy in to this thing where, if you're being negative about the Big E title reign, you're being negative about Big E. And that's not the case.
In the case of you and I, it probably couldn't be further from the truth.
No,
have been stands of this guy for a long time. There's a big difference between saying something, to use a toxic phrase, isn't working, and not being a fan of the people trying to work that specific angle. I really like Big E. I like Big E. I've liked him since he was doing, you know, 3 Ain't Enough, Man, I Want 5. Like, yes. This guy's always had it. He's always had a great character. The first match really opened my eyes to this dude was the one against Rusev back in the day, where they just murdered each other. I don't know, it was like 2014 or 2015.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, like, these guys, like, he's fantastic. It's just, this company, going to what Lanza said, the booking is the important part with the
booking
title
don't
reign.
Lie.
Yeah, the booking doesn't lie. And when it comes to the title reigns, it's not even the length of it. It's the quality of it. It's not the quantity. Yes, it's not how many you have. It's the actual substance of the presentation of it. Roman Reigns is in an angle with fixed characters. He's never really made to show a lot of ass at any point. Big E has to do goofy things and be the subject of goofery on a regular basis.
Reigns is in a badass feud with Brock Lesnar. Big E is in a feud with who? Seth Rollins?
And you know the worst part is that the loss to Big E would have been wonderful for the Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar feud.
Yes.
Because it would have shown Roman Reigns has vulnerability, that maybe he's not as good as he says he is. It would have put a chip on his shoulder when he returns back to SmackDown to have a reign of terror to try to cover up the fact that he had lost to Big E Langston.
Yes.
There was no good reason for him to
lose. There'd be some depth in that character. There'd be some doubt. There'd be something. And it would give
Big E a huge important win that would have been meaningful without taking away. And well, I mean, okay. Like, I actually think it done correctly, Big E beating. No, I had to put that.
Where's Kenny at? Come on, bring out Kenny.
I've got the picture. If you want it done correctly,
this could be a great feud.
I should have this as a background character instead of the Takahashi or whatever. But yeah, like I think that a victory over Roman Reigns to the WWE fans still means something. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, if done correctly, I think Big E beating Roman clean, and even more so beating off the Usos on his way to beating Roman clean at this Survivor Series match where the titles aren't on the line, but it's just a bragging rights thing. I think this actually achieves the idea of what bragging rights is, a thing that normally is a target missed by every promotion I ever see. Like, this would have actually been an opportunity for Big E to get bragging rights, and it really further solidifies his championship reign as well. Yeah, so I just view this as like kind of bad on a number of different angles. It was just not a good night.
It shows that they're not really all in on Big E. It shows that, you know, this is Kofi Part 2. I hate to say this. But I don't think he's going to get beaten 20 seconds by Brock. He might.
Yeah, you say that. You say that, but I think what we saw here in losing to Roman clean without even the help of the Usos, I think that the most egregious thing is, like, dude, it should have definitely been the case that the Usos, like, attacked Xavier Woods and Kofi backstage and then showed up and cost Big E the match.
Right.
I know it's chalk, but that's how you actually protect a guy. And though it is boring, the alternative is this. And I think that leaves Big E in a much worse place. And I think you can criticize that, I should hope, and not have it be interpreted as criticizing Big E. It's criticizing the angle and what it is doing for the character of Big E.
Yeah. Any other Survivor Series itself thoughts? We can get into Fallout in any part of the Lazy River if you want.
Not that I could think. I had to just power through this show because those five-man matches or five-woman matches were just so
Chris, droll. I enjoyed Sunday with my family watching football, and then I waited for people to watch the pay-per-view, and I waited for people to tell me what to watch.
I mean... Welcome to my world, man. I write music, see what people are saying, go and watch the show. And usually at 1.25
I love my peeps who work for them, but damn it, you're not giving me compelling television. And it's not your fault. It's not their fault.
It isn't. One thing I know I hater of AEW or whatever, but what one thing that AEW runs absolute circles around WWE on is format.
Yes.
You watch Dynamite, especially if you're watching Dynamite later on, where you have the ability to fast forward. The way that show is formatted, you still basically, like, yeah, you're skipping entrances or whatever, but you'd be doing that regardless. But there are lots of stopping points where you need to just stop and watch, and you end up watching most of the show. SmackDown, in the way that it is done with the amount of recap packages, ditto with Raw, you can fast forward through in nearly entire segments at times because there's just constant recappery. And then you get to these matches that are, you know, Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss. I know what that is. Let's go to the scan bar and move this show forward. Moving along now is what that tag team should be named, because that's exactly what I do every time
guys
show up.
I'll have you know. That Corbin Big E feud is what built up Big E into a title contender.
Yeah, but here's the thing. That was Baron Corbin. No, or King Corbin. I don't remember.
Happy.
Happy. Yeah, middle manager Corbin.
Middle management Corbin. What else can we do? Midlife crisis Corbin, looking forward to, where he tries to grow the hair back.
Guy in the hot dog suit Corbin. Yeah,
old guy at the club, Corbin, where he's wearing a gold chain and a button-down shirt with too many buttons unbuttoned. What else can we get? Bitter convention-going Corbin, where it's like, hey, did you used to be at WWE a long time ago? Yeah, kid. 50 for the autograph, 100 for a picture. Okay, how about 20 for a picture? it's too much, mister. You weren't that good.
No, I WWE's format right now is so browsable. Whereas AEW, even if you don't love every angle on the show or whatever, like, the show as a format is a coherent format where, provided you're into the angles that are on, you're watching everything because they move stuff along. They're more guilty of having too much stuff. Versus, yes,
they're
not enough. I would say stuffed sandwiches.
That's the problem.
That's their problem, and they might actually benefit from the occasional recap package from things like on Dark and Elevation or Behind the Elite or whatever their show is. Like if those are going to be relevant, because, like, you know, for example, I don't know, has there been Kenny Omega fallout? Because if it has been, I haven't seen it on Dynamite.
No, they wrote him off with that backstage interview after Full Gear.
Okay. Like they didn't do like anything
but,
on like
being but it, here's the weird thing. There's no flow to it, and the fact is, you have NPCs who have been introduced to keep the show flowing, and they just drag the show down because it becomes backstage politics of the television show, and it's just
well, and Adam Pearce's character has like no flavor. He's generic devious.
Yes, yes.
Like, level one evil. Not like, you know, not level two where he's like down at the ring yet. He's just at level one evil.
Funky training program. It's, you know, don't monologue your plan yet, but accidentally reveal it as you're talking to people.
Yeah, I just
yeah.
It's boring.
Okay, time to give a shout out to our sponsor. Sponsor this week is MyBookie. New copy! Yes! We hope you didn't fill up on Turkey Day, because at MyBookie, the fun is just getting started. This Cyber Monday, MyBookie is giving you a bet one, get one free promotion on the Monday night football games. On Cyber Monday, bet against the spread on the Week 12 Monday night football game and whatever you wager up to $100. You'll receive that same value back in a risk-free bet for Week 13's Monday night game. MyBookie is the only sportsbook where buy one, get one means you're the one holding the bag. Don't miss out. Head out to mybookie.ag this Monday, to get in on the exclusive promotion. To set the stage before you redeem the bet one, get one free promotion, why not wager on the biggest matchup of Week 12, the LA Rams versus Green Bay Packers, in a clash of NFC juggernauts. Don't look for either side to hold back. Bet the over and thank me later. Noted, that is their copy, not mine. Set yourself up for success by doubling anytime you say bet the over, I kind of go, oh, that might be, yeah. Set yourself up for success by doubling your first deposit when using promo code ROPES at MyBookie. That's promo code ROPES to double your initial deposit all the way up to $1,000. I myself might be betting a little bit on the college football games tomorrow. We have the Commonwealth Cup between my valiant Virginia Cavaliers and those evil, evil Virginia Tech Hokies. Hate them. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. We thank MyBookie for their sponsorship of Shake Them Ropes and other shows here on the Voices of Wrestling Network. And now, Chris, the trademarked, the trademarked, I'm trying to think of the other words for that are like trademarked, but patented, lazy river of wrestling criticism. For those of you who have not listened to this show in a long, long time and just happened to be on here on the holiday weekend, welcome back. No TV reviews, nothing strict. Anything in wrestling we watched that crosses our mind can be part of the lazy river of wrestling criticism. And as I opened up with Starrcade 89 last week and gave a lengthy monologue, Chris, you are up, sir.
All right, so I'm going to begin tonight's Lazy River at a point that I was like not prepared to begin at about 2 hours ago. And I guess that has to be on the subject of Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee is someone who in the ring, when he had his feud with Adam Cole, I thought he was quite good. I actually think that he was like a very good on the microphone performer and like really excelled at that part of it. On commentary, he has been a bit of a wild card for a long time now, but an enjoyable wild card. Does he blow the angles on a regular basis? Yes, but I think most of us don't care because the angles suck. Sorry, WWE fans, but like that's kind of the reality, right? Like you'd care, like if this was Adam Page and Pat McAfee was doing some of the things on commentary with Adam Page, you'd be like, whoa, this guy's like commentary war crimes. I want him off my TV. But the reality is you don't care because he's doing it with Rick Boogs.
Wait, hold on. He's ruining the angles, those very subtle, you know, intricately planned angles.
Look, yeah, because there were a lot of nuances to what Rick Boogs was doing, especially with the Ottawa envelope filter setting that he uses, that I feel like on a regular basis, McAfee outshadows. You know, he stands on the table and he dances around, and otherwise you'd be really kind of hearing the guitar.
Okay.
And I feel like that takes away from the art.
I need a judgment call. Better guitar player tonight, Rick Boogs or Humberto Carrillo?
You know,
just continue.
It's just a Sophie's choice.
I'm putting myself on mute. Please continue.
A real Sophie's choice here. So We get to tonight, and McAfee has another one of those nights on commentary, which he has been, frankly, more want to do. And I think it's directly correlated with the quality and or lack of consistency in the on-air product. During the pay-per-view, mind you, like during Survivor Series and stuff, he was asking questions that either were unbelievable character work or he legitimately does not know. What is going on commentary? You know, I wish I could like come up with the example. But a few times
I'll give you one because he said, "Hey, I saw that on TV." It's a lot like Lawler. Lawler never watched the other show. He only watched his show. So it's one of those things where he doesn't really know what's going on Raw because I believe he might be doing a radio broadcast at that time of a football game. I don't think he's on the Monday night. Or I don't know. Maybe he's just taking the night off. Who knows? But continue.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, this has been a known quantity with him, and he's been a little bit mentally checked out. I would argue, and I think, Jeff, I mean, it's hard to put like a quantity on this. I'd argue that we have heard in recent weeks and months increased mental checkout from Pat McAfee, and we've always kind of felt like he's on borrowed time. So we get to tonight in the opening segment of SmackDown here in the first 10 minutes. I think I clocked it at around like minute 9 or whatever. If you want to watch minute 9:16, I'll give you kind of the setup here. Kayla Braxton has just been sent out of the ring by Paul Heyman. She leaves the ring and there is a chant going on in the crowd that's not quite audible because WWE at this point is doing this weird crowd mixing thing where they're basically punching in whatever chants they want to be in there, and so the crowd you're getting is washed out. But I think what's important to juxtapose this next moment up with is the incident on Monday here where we had a fan jump Seth Rollins, and the standard protocol for commentary is to call the action and not call something that isn't happening. So I bring that up because, you know, like, you know, Byron Saxton real quickly he thinks it's like a part of an angle, like he doesn't know what's going on, and then they're like, no, stop, Byron, and Byron stops. Pat McAfee says, oh, are they saying let's go Brandon? And real quickly, for those of you who are not familiar with the phrase, let's go Brandon.
Or in the United States, you know.
Yeah, or in the United States here. So Jeff Hawkins and I have a language code. Don't look at me like that. We have a language code on this show, right?
Yes.
No. Like we have certain words that you and I have agreed upon. Like we say them off air or whatever.
We try and keep it radio friendly for the most
part. Right. So like, you know, and we both agreed on this a long time ago.
Yes.
And so for me to actually explain what the literal definition of the phrase let's go Brandon is, actually would require me to break that code. I'm not going to do that. If you want to go and Google that, you can. I'll put it to you this way. It refers to the current president of the United States, Joe Biden. And it is a word that you can't say on television. It's essentially, it's a verb.
Meaning to copulate.
Yes, expressing a negative sentiment towards the current president, Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And let's go, Brandon. You can go into what's the meme about, or
you
know,
F you. It's F.
Yeah. F you, Brandon, or F you, Biden. What if this is really all just about getting this guy named Brandon? No. Anyways, McAfee tosses this out on the air on a live microphone. Yes. And you kind of hear like commentary sort of take a hesitation moment here, because I think like it takes a minute for Cole at all to regroup here. But I think McAfee needs to be done. And I want to make it clear, it has nothing to do about a fondness for the target of the comment, Joe Biden, whatever, right? Like, you're running a family-friendly show that has been doggedly, as weird as it is with their Saudi Arabia relationship, but they try to be, as best they can in terms of domestic affairs, non-political. They do like tribute to the troops, but like, you know, like they have moved away in recent years. I know their history of like Bill Clinton jokes and that sort of thing. All that sort of stuff. Relationship with Donald Trump even in the aughts. But like the last 10 years or so, this has been increasingly apolitical, run of the mill, we do breast cancer awareness with Susan Cohn, like, you know, generic corporate woke sort of company. It is within that paradigm of the publicly traded mindset, of the we're PG family friendly mindset. It cannot be acceptable to express a code word that is the F word on the air, on a microphone, regardless of the politician. I mean, it could be Val Kilmer, right? Like, if there was a code phrase that was like F you Val Kilmer and McAfee said that on the air, it's equally as problematic because he's still saying F you. It gets compounded because of the political nature of it. But like, the issue up front is the language component.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I need to know the nature of who, if the line was fed, if it was him on his own, because that pause might have been somebody in the headset screaming at somebody. If you want to go the most optimistic route. So, and that's why Michael Cole couldn't respond to it immediately. That's because, as you know, they're wearing headphones and they're getting screamed at if they say dumb stuff on the air, things like that. If it was fed to him, he's not getting canned.
No, if it was fed to him, he's not getting canned. Right. But boy, is that a damning indictment.
Yes, but this... Vince wasn't friendly to the Clintons, as you noted as well. So it's one of those... Okay, what do you do if they fed him the line? I mean, what? I mean, in terms
well,
of...
Well, obviously you send the cops in, you arrest him,
no,
Jeff.
No. I know that, but it's one of those things where, well, McAfee has to go. Well, he was fed the line.
Well, what I'm saying yeah. has to go. I mean, it's a lot. I'm canceling him or whatever. But like, no, like I think it's bad when someone's on a live national broadcast to express FU, period, whoever it is, and doubly so when you start involving politics. Because I mean, even in better times, it would still be a bad proposition. But these are not better times. Mm.
Yeah, I just it's so stupid to do it. Just don't do it.
No, it was egregious. I mean, when I say he has to go, I'm saying like they literally could put someone else in that commentary booth next week. McAfee is adding nothing.
See, that's weird because I find him going. I don't want to say that terminology. I say him going away from the patterned thing, something by now it's gotten a little patterned, especially with the Boogs Nakamura stuff where he's dancing on the table and things like that. I get, you know, you gotta have your go-to bits at work that were spontaneous before. It's a little Robin Williams-y, but I am still a fan of somebody just not being saying all the right things. Even if they're wrong, even if, like in this case, this is wrong. You shouldn't say that. But if you replace him, you get Corey Graves. And I don't want Corey Graves on a second show.
No, I get that. But what you are speaking to, the symptom. You're speaking to the symptom, which is that the program is so boring that you need Pat McAfee effing it up in there to keep you engaged. Because you don't enjoy what they're getting. I know. I get it. I feel, Jeff, we agree.
No, I know we agree.
You're in the circle. You're in this. I'm here. It's a big hug right through the Zoom call.
You know what we need? We need Aunt Pam back. Damn it. This country's falling apart, and Aunt Pam's...
I think you could... There's a correlation there. No, I feel you. I'm just... Like, I get that. But we like... Jeff, this is like when I need to talk to you. Sometimes, Jeff, we like people for the wrong reason. There's an appeal. Jeff, look at my love life. Sometimes we're attracted to people who are wrong for us. But we need to know when to cut our losses and acknowledge that we can like something, but we like it for the wrong reason.
No, Chris, hold those bags. It'll come back up to its full value again. Don't ever give up. Okay. My turn. CM Punk, MJF. The 20-minute promo battle. I really liked it. I liked it a lot. I'm still wondering if I loved it. That's and you guys are going to know why, because I've said this before. And I know I've been sussed about this by others. I've been sussed about this by Lanza and Krejci too. At the same time, is there too much WWE commentary in these put downs? You know, are they character put downs or are they life put downs? That's the question I have here, because they're towing a bit of the fourth wall here. And I like the heat. Don't get me wrong. I really do. And yeah, I liked the Miz line. I don't know if I loved the Miz line, but I liked the Miz line, you know, where you're just a less famous Miz, as if the Miz is really famous. Well, he was on Dancing with the Stars and he has his own reality show,
but that's not the WWE outfits. Stuff.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It was, you know, yeah. Punk left. You can make fun of that. That's good. It was a good promo battle. It was a great promo battle. I'll say it's a great promo battle. Was it an all-time promo battle? I'm not willing to go there just yet. Give it some time. I think these two can do better than this. Because I don't even think MJF got off some great lines on Punk necessarily. I think MJF kind of went cheap on the, you know, the Punky Brewster stuff. And, you know, that was a little dismissive as Weasley. MJF has had some strong, strong lines in the past. And this didn't even cut the surface. And if he goes there, I think Punk could really get into this. But as a starter, sure, I really like this a lot, Chris. What did you think? For note's sake, just as a thing, they went a little long, which made some of the other matches have to cut time, which is a little bit of a problem with the formatting. And, of course, the jam band style of, hey, you don't want to cut people off at the knees, but hey. You know, maybe tighten it up a little bit in terms of the staging and presentation. But your thoughts?
I liked it. I thought it went long. I thought what kept me from getting to the next level, because initially I was like, all right, I'm here, and I think MJF and Punk have great chemistry.
Yes.
That there's a lot of stuff in this angle that works. This is not like Danielson Page for me. Like I'm broadly speaking, this is a coherent, this is not a like indie coherent sort of angle. This is like a coherent sort of angle for me. And I'm digging it. But I think where this missed me a little bit is that MJF's motivation for this promo was not clear or not fully achieved. He was so like the promo was so focused on getting the one-liners, the zingers, and the WWE-isms that it missed sort of the most important part of this promo, which is you need to do something to meaningfully egg on CM Punk. And I thought, yes, you can interpret a lot of the jibes at Punk as, you know, well, he was trying to agitate him. He was trying to egg him on. But, like, there's a certain level of extra targeted needling that needed to happen at Punk to really make Punk want to fight MJF, especially with Punk sort of coming out and saying, my opening salvo was, I already shut you up. So, like, why am I here?
Yeah,
like,
that was almost scoreboard right there.
Yes,
but then after that. I think you nailed it, because I couldn't put my finger on it, but no, that's very good. Let me expound on that a little bit, because it's a great point. When Punk got into the four pillars talk and into the, when I do media, I don't talk about you talk. That's motivation. That's needling at MJF's pride right there. And there's a little bit of difficulty in MJF's character right now, because they're really playing up the, I'm going to be a free agent in 2024 and I got Bruce Pritchard's phone number and WWE is going to want to talk to me type of thing, which I know it's supposed to egg on a certain person who's using AEW as they just don't want to watch WWE anymore. I get that. I get that as a thing, but yes, he needed to come stronger on Punk's motivations of coming back after 7 years.
I'll go one step further. I think this needed to end with MJF attacking Punk. I think that this, in a weird way, needed to backfire. Instead of MJF getting Punk to attack him, this needed to end with MJF attacking Punk.
Getting frustrated that he wasn't getting one up on the one-liner.
And just attacking Punk. And like, now Punk has a reason to fight MJF, because like, MJF beat the shit out of Punk.
Yeah. But I really would have liked. I would have
also, that would have saved us from the agonizingly long QT Marshall match where we had like a body slam marathon going on in there. Again, it was like a little bit of a rib, but like this was such a nothing match, and especially when you're cutting other matches for time. Can we cut the QT Marshall match for time, please?
No, you know what? Just thinking back, that was Punk's best line was, "You're not even one of the four pillars. That's Britt. You're replaced by Britt Baker." I thought that was fantastic because, you know, even though, look, let's give Miz, or not Miz, Jesus, let's give MJF some credit. Chris is dying right now. No, the when he brought up the Miz line and that just that cutaway from the crowd and MJF held it for a second and then mouthing the F, you know, right there. That was fantastic character work by Miz. I mean, by Miz again. The MJF thing. Oh, I am in so much trouble right now.
I just think that the audible should have been called. MJF attacks Punk. Like the angle is great. I think that MJF is a wonderful foil for Punk. I love Negan looking Punk. The age is wearing well on the man. And I think broadly speaking that this is off to a fine start. Yes, the QT Marshall match.
It's better than my analysis being off to a fine start.
Well, you know, once you get who's in the angle straight, Jeff, I think you're gonna snap into shape real quick here.
So it's Miz and CM Punk.
Yeah, you got Miz and CM Punk. Punk needs to, during the course of this feud, avoid diving to the outside because he's not gonna get caught.
That's a good pull. You're turning the lazy river, sir.
Okay. My turn on the lazy river here. NXT UK, with the cuts to every part of the roster here, not named Roman Reigns or anything related to the Roman Reigns angle here, I just don't have the energy anymore to talk about NXT UK. So once again, I am shuttering my doors on NXT UK. It's been a heck of a run. And I'm kind of sorry for this little sub-faction that it's not in a better company because there's actually not a bad little brand. It's just, there's nothing going on in this show.
I got home from my plane trip. I had nothing to do, so I put it on in the background. I watched the Sam Gradwell match, and I've turned on him. I think he's great. I do. I think he's really, really good. The dumb haircut aside, I've now moved past that. He, you know, when he had that match where they were whipping each other with the cords and stuff, I was like, okay, I'm kind of getting into this guy. I believe the match was with a kid. That's just how I've already watched 3 hours of wrestling today. I can't remember what I watched to begin with, but no, I'm really liking Sam. They have a very good roster over there at NXT UK.
Like Rampage Brown is sneaky good. Sam Gradwell is sneaky good. Saxon Huxley is sneaky good. There's a lot of people on that roster who are actually quite good.
Yes.
And it's a shame that like somehow this little sub roster can't just get like a breakaway deal or something where they can just kind of make their own TV show or whatever, because it would be a damn good TV show. And I know it's something like this weird contrarian opinion, and that's what I trade in these days. But like, I just have always really like Walter was a fantastic champion. Ilya is a fantastic champion. Pete Dunne was a great champion. This is actually a brand with a sneaky good legacy on it. Pretty Deadly's evolved into a pretty decent.
Yeah. Give me six writers who really love wrestling and know the history of wrestling to fly over to the UK, help them out there and build your own show with no WWE isms in it. And I would be there, man.
And
you know, some more promos as opposed to like talk show gimmicks and stuff. I know you like the Noam Dar talk show.
I think Noam Dar is just a funny, like vivacious good heel. He cracks me up. What can I say?
Let me go to the main roster for my next one because it's a tale of two brands, but the tale is still the same. So we have Charlotte and Becky fight each other. And then we're here to set up the next contender for each of their belts. And Liv Morgan comes out and cries. Tony Storm comes out and gets two pies to the face. Now, Chris and I are privy to some information. Let me put it this way. When I went to NYU, to learn script writing, TV script writing. It was eye-opening to me. My professor comes in, he goes, everything you think you know about television writing is incorrect. And he gave us all a script of a pilot he wrote. It was a pilot for Jeff Garlin of Curb Your Enthusiasm. It was his first project after leaving Second City. And he was a big name in comedy. And my professor was there to make, you know, to try and get him a good role. It was him and Leah Remini for a pilot. Leah Remini, who was on King of Queens, the wife. My professor now hates Jeff Garlin, by the way, just always hated him. So when he went Curb Your Enthusiasm, oh, I hate that guy. And then it's like, whatever. But anyways, so we're looking at the script and we watched the pilot. And there's probably two jokes in the script that made it into the pilot. And he says, here's what you learn. Just because the byline says written by, that doesn't mean that's who wrote the show. What happens is you write a story and then you get it into committee and then jokes get taken out. Jokes get added back in. Plot points get taken out. Plot points get revised. Plot points get created and then put in, and then they film it in front of a studio audience, but your name is still on it. I will say that for one of these programs, that's what happened, and leave it at that. Probably for both of these programs, that's what happened and left it at that. But I'm going to tell you this, people in my timeline, not very happy about the Toni Storm program. They just thought that this made her look like an absolute geek. And I don't think that was the intent, but that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I guess all I can say is it could be worse.
Oh, it could be much worse.
It could be worse.
Yeah.
Take my word at that, people. It could be worse.
Canny, should we let see how it all plays out?
Honestly, it played out apparently about as good as it could.
But it also goes back to our Big E conversation. How are these champs important if all they fight are the people who are important, and you don't make them important by building up actual contenders to build up their legacy? You know, it's one of those things, and just to kind of circle back on the Big E thing, is everybody thinks just having the title makes you important. When I was a kid, I knew of only three title holders. I knew Ric Flair, I knew Harley Race, because that's the guy they always say he beat, and I heard about this guy named Jack Briscoe, who I'd never seen wrestle before. That's it. That's the list. Now it's like 15-time champ, 20-time champ, blah, 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 and half of these people don't mean anything. Back in my day, yeah, sure, it's a little bit of that. But at the same time, how good is your legacy if all you're talking about is, man, I think he can make the Hall of Fame because he has 20 different title runs and none of those title runs mattered. You know,
this is the new phrase I'm gravitating towards is coherent. And like, there's like coherent. And then there's like sort of an indie coherent.
We have a rise of a cat over your left
yeah,
shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, little haze. Yeah, okay. Rising to the top here.
Heard the Big E talk and came to say Hawkins is a moron. Yeah.
Wisdom of the elders.
Yeah, that's all I had to say about that. It was just like, man, on both shows they made their women's champs. Again, this is to your problem as well, though, the whole Bianca Belair thing, because Bianca Belair, no longer a serious contender, never really treated as a serious contender when she lost the belt. And we're just going to have Sasha won't do it, but Charlotte and Becky both eat up contenders alive because they're just so strong.
Yes, they are strong. I think sometimes they have to be, the performers themselves need to be more mindful about the other people they're working with because they're made characters. And these other people who are performers who are trying to make careers that are lucrative, like you're actively hurting the other people you're juxtaposed against. Bianca Belair this year is just a fantastic example of this. I think that, you know, if Charlotte, who has had her documented troubles with working with people this year, working with others who have had documented troubles as well. But like, point being, Bianca was not taken care of. And I think Charlotte could have been more of a champion for taking care of Bianca if she wanted to. She doesn't. I think that Becky, look, they want to book her as a heel. She's over as a babyface. But, I mean, if she wanted to be a more definitive and concrete heel on a regular basis, she knows how to do that. She's got too much wrestling IQ for me to believe that this is really her best level heel work. She's
eccentric babyface than anything. I was like, yeah, dressed in these weird clothes, and that makes me a heel.
Yeah.
Not really?
Yeah, and then I'll do a You People promo here this week following Survivor Series or whatever. But at the same time, we still all hate Charlotte, and Charlotte's this Mondo heel, so like we don't really hate Becky. And Liv Morgan's not really beloved. So, and this seems to be a recurring problem in wrestling, and I think this just speaks to problems in booking patterns. You have these feuds where either the babyface or the heel really has no opportunity to meaningfully overcome the dynamic to make the story maximally interesting. Maybe Liv Morgan, and this is what's weird about this, Liv Morgan might very well beat Becky Lynch, but even if she does, the way they've been telling this story won't make it feel like Liv Morgan beat
banana peel, banana yeah, peel finish, right. Even if she does get a title reign. Yeah.
Right. It's not going to feel like she really beat and exceeded and rose to the level. She might defeat Becky Lynch. She might get a W and win a title, but it won't feel like Liv Morgan leveled up
right
to Becky Lynch's
right
level.
And also,
and that's been a problem. I would say company to company, broadly speaking, I've seen this a number of times this year.
And what happens is they're just going to run the program back again, which doesn't give that heel the chance to go away, which is why Kenny Omega leaving right now to get surgery is so damn perfect. It is. It doesn't give him a chance to eat at Hangman Page's victory at all. Or, I get my instant rematch. So the next pay-per-view, we're going to do this with a stipulation. And we're just going to do the same feud for a number of weeks, except you have the title this time, as opposed to me. There's no feud in there. There's no heat in there. There's nothing in there other than the prop.
And when Kenny shows back up, let's say second or third title defense, it will be much more intriguing, even yes, if you don't think that Omega has a real chance at winning the title back, just because there's now been some distance, some breath. We'll have, I guess, the follow-up to the Young Bucks giving Adam Page the title more or less there at the end of the pay-per-view. There'd just be a fresher, more interesting angle.
Okay, your turn.
I guess I'll just go ahead since I'm like kind of standing here. I kind of got caught flat footed. I didn't realize we were right at the end of that. I'll do Danielson and Cabana here.
Okay.
I like the tooth stuff. I think that made this good.
This was cut for time because of the Punk segment.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine because I don't think that this match actually needed to go super long. I don't actually think that that needed to be that way. I think Adam Page comes off as slightly a bad friend when he doesn't show up until way after the match is over. I mean, what's Cabana's lost the tooth? And Danielson's parading around with the tooth for what seems like an eternity. It feels like Adam Page should be out there.
Angry and pissed and just ready to kill this guy.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, and maybe even call an audible here because, thought the tooth is an unplanned thing, right? Call an audible here because, like, Danielson now has almost gone past the point of believability. Now,
well, it's
stupid babyface syndrome.
Yes, it's ratcheted up the stakes. It's like, not only are you beating my friends, you're maiming them now. Like, if he broke somebody's jaw, if he breaks Alan Five Angels' jaw next week in Atlanta, worked. Okay, cool. I'll take this. But Paige has to come out there and be trying to kill him for doing it, as opposed to just beating him. You know, it's that whole.
And he can't show up way late.
Yeah. Yeah. It has to be right as he, like, a quick, you know, boom. It's obvious the jaw's broken. He can't continue. Paige is running down to the ring to try and stop this madness. Yeah. Even if he gets DQ'd, even if Danielson wins by DQ, I'd be fine with that. But yeah, I'm not seeing angry Adam Page, and that's kind of bothering me in any of these programs. He's just kind of happy-go-lucky Gen Z cowboy, and I'm just like, emo cowboy. I'm just like, okay, cool. Give me some fire hair, brother.
Yeah, and it's just, it's the Danielson's making him look stupid, and this is sort of the concern, or one of the concerns I've had with this angle, which is just that, like, is this really a good vehicle for Adam Page, or is this a good vehicle for people who are really excited about a Danielson heel turn? And if you want a Danielson heel turn, don't get me wrong, dope. I you know, okay. In terms of helping out Adam Page, I'm unclear that it is. I think it's making Danielson a more intriguing character, but I don't know that it's making Page a more intriguing character.
I agree. Yeah, sometimes these programs only go one way, and right now it's only going one way. I'll stay on Dynamite for my last one because it's the only other note I have on here. Although I'm kind of thinking if you have another one, I may add one real quick. But the 8-man to end the show. I really liked this match, Chris. I thought this was a lot of fun. Yeah, we got to stop doing the throwing the weight belts into the crowd because in Chicago, it's famous for throwing balls back for the visitor. They threw the belt back. It hit Aubrey in the leg. Luckily, you know, Cody later put back on. It's obvious that these crowds are going to continue to work to turn Cody heel despite what Cody quote unquote wants. I thought the match itself, though, man, a lot of these guys work really, really. Of course, El Idolo and Pac work well together. FTR and almost anybody were working well together. Cody had some pretty good chemistry with El Idolo as well. I liked the spot with Tully and Arn and Jose and them both punching Jose. Still gives me the feeling something's amiss between Tully and Arn. And I like that. I like that little Easter egg where it could be that was just these two wanted to get it on with each other. And Jose was kind of yelling at both and they told him to shut up because secretly everybody kind of likes Tully too. But on the other hand, it could be just Tully and Arn got a little bit of a deal here and it's a little bit of a head fake. And I'm digging this. I'll be interested to see how Atlanta reacts to Cody in an Atlanta street fight against Andrade.
Yeah. I just continue to be baffled by Cody's
bewildered, bamboozled.
It's going to be what it's going to be. And it's one of these segments on Dynamite, a show whose format I like, where I just sort of go like, oh, okay, well, I'll move on to the next one because this program's not doing anything for me. But that's okay. There's enough on the show that's worth watching for me. Cody has miscast himself so badly here. I can't like get really interested in the matches because he's such like an uncompelling. He's such a not likable baby face, but he's up against people who are definitively heels that I don't know what I'm watching here.
Well, it's so weird because like everybody, the crowd knows its role here and it's playing the role it wants to play, which is we like all these guys except you, sir. You're the one guy we don't like. And every time you're in this match, no matter how good you do, we're going to boo you anyways. And it's a little frustrating to watch, I'll admit it, because it's obvious the company wants the story to go one way, I think, and the crowd's just going to fight them tooth and nail all the way across. I mean, at this point,
my frustration is that this is the one angle that they've chosen to make this stand on. Out of all the many things that we have seen,
we don't know that they're choosing to make the stand here. That's the thing. It's like it's one of those things. Like,
they've been forcing the issue on this Cody Rhodes heel turn for a while. Like Cody has been going against the grain for quite a while now.
I think we need a fake birth in the crowd and Cody to save the day by knowing how to do it.
And then he drops the baby. And that's the heel turn.
They boo him anyways when he gets like, look, the baby's safe. Boo, all right, screw you. Throws it down. And then Shivani. I want Shivani on camera. My God, he's killing me.
Oh my God, he dropped that baby. What the hell?
They were going to name that child Brandon.
He let go of Brandon.
He let go of Brandon. Then Cody yells, F you, Brandon. And it just becomes... Oh, good. your turn on the river, sir, while I compose.
Jeez Louise, do I want to go Mysterio Family Theater or...
No, let's do that, please, because it's always amusing.
Oh, God. Nothing makes both these Mysterios look like bigger losers than losing to Bobby Lashley, a guy who has been, at best, moderately protected on this roster. And they take care of him okay.
But question for you. Who is a bigger loser right now, the Mysterios? Or as 24/7 champ Dana Brooke, because Dana at least has a title,
right? It's, and people Dana has to be the bigger winner.
Congratulated her for the 24. All your hard work has paid off, Dana.
I mean, you know, for this person in this company, that's probably true. Like this is peak. This is peak performance. The pinnacle. Yeah, you may not like it, but this is peak performance for Dana Brooke.
I like Dana Brooke. I think she tries hard.
I actually think she's a not bad character actor too. Yeah. She's actually got like some comedic timing. And then the other one was Austin Theory as the reveal for the golden egg.
Oh, this golden egg.
Nothing tells you more. Don't give a damn about our future mysteries than the payoff of Austin Theory being the out of nowhere surprise reveal of this is the guy who's got the egg, and they never established.
And it turns into a title shot. For as we said before, this could have been hint hint much much worse. if you recall that conversation, Chris. Yeah, this thing about the egg, which is a bait and switch for Rock about his Netflix movie. Maybe you get him on a Zoom call about the egg. But it also just an excuse to get Vince McMahon on TV. And apparently it worked in some respects about the viewers. It didn't do a great number, but it did better than before.
Well, man, you know, that's the other thing is like that. I Lanza was talking about this in the flagship here this week, but I just kind of like want to hear and, you know, smack the table. I'm like, let's not take a victory lap on 1.6 million viewers for Raw. I think that if anything, what we are starting to settle in on, whether you're looking at the Rampage ratings or the Raw ratings, is a new plateau. AEW now has a spot in the marketplace, and that's good. But it's not as though having a competitor is necessarily juicing up the overall numbers of the wrestling viewership pool. And I think a big part of that is that WWE is just, this is not the Monday Night Wars in the sense that WWF was putting on a good show and Monday Nitro was putting on a good show. This is a competition between two companies, one of whom, AEW, is putting on a good show more or less on a weekly basis, and more or less having good pay-per-views. And another company, WWE, that puts on a pretty lousy television show on a regular basis, has a few good pay-per-views during the course of the year, but they seem to be in this sort of scattershot way that you can't predict. It's not like you can go, oh, this is a big show, so you can bet that this one's going to kick ass. It's more like, wow, I'll never believe it, but the Halloween Havoc thing that they did in, I don't know, let's say August, was really fantastic. This is a company that surprises you with a random good show versus reliable good shows. And so there's just like not a real sense of competition. And thusly, you're not getting an elevated nature of quality either. You have AEW doing what they're going to do and WWE doing what they're going to do. And you don't have the thing that was happening in 96 where you have what is a reaction to one another, sometimes almost to a fault. The case in NWO and DX, for example, or any number of other things. But like there was like a real obvious interplay where like they were taking shots at each other and cues off of each other and trying to outdo one another. Like AEW's not trying to outdo WWE because there's nothing to outdo over at WWE right now. Like literally you can outdo WWE just by putting on a better television show, which is true. But also then suggests that there's no need for real competition or a focused study of your opponent to better elevate yourself and thus forcing your opponent to better elevate themselves. And some of the things you might hope for as a viewer.
I've changed my mind on my last topic because I was originally going to go into 2.0 and Daniel Garcia and then Chris Jericho, and hoping to God that it wasn't going to be another one of these, hey, like Orange Cassidy, I'm going to put the kid over by being in a match with me type of thing. Going to NXT 2.0. We now have the final teams for the War Games matches for NXT War Games, December 5th or December 6th, whatever date it is. We'll do a preview of that next week. But my God, we have the Millionaires Club versus the New Blood from WCW circa 2001 in the men's division, where LA Knight is considered an NXT veteran. Heels and faces working together. And here's the problem. I don't have a problem with the new kids being the heels against the beloved veterans if you hadn't rebranded the show to NXT 2.0, where you want to feature the new faces. They have to be the baby faces here. What are they doing here, Chris?
I don't even have a problem with them being the heels against the veterans, but you need to actually have beloved veteran like baby faces getting massacred here by the new blood. And LA Knight is not a beloved veteran babyface. He's neither beloved nor veteran nor babyface. And when I say veteran, he's a veteran wrestler, but he's not a veteran in this company. And so he's not even of a high status or repute. Like, no. Where this would have been very useful if they had foresight on this is if Braun Breaker's team came in and annihilated the Undisputed Era.
Yes.
Yeah, like that would have been awesome. The Undisputed
and a fitting goodbye because they were in all the other War Games matches.
And have the Undisputed Era lose in an undisputed way to Braun Breaker's team, like where Breaker's team basically runs through the Undisputed and like Cole's just shell shocked on the way out.
And in the women's side, there's only one story I think you can tell here, and let me know if you agree with this because I love Kaylee Ray. Kaylee Ray is fantastic. Kaylee Ray is fantastic in a War Games. If you watch that first women's War Games, she's either giving heavy damage or taking heavy damage. She is fantastic. But this babyface team is way too powerful. You have Io Shirai, Raquel Gonzalez, Kaylee Ray, and Cora Jade against Toxic Attraction and Dakota Kai. This has to be War Games 91, where Cora Jade is going to play Brian Pillman and has to be the weak link of this team. And I think the baby faces have to lose this one. I just think this team, I mean, Toxic Attraction ain't scaring nobody. I'm sorry. They're a decent mid-card heel stable for women.
But the best worker is JC Jane. And you can't make her the champion because you got
Mandy Rose,
right? And but I mean, like,
and Dakota Kai is just
if JC Jane was the main focus of the team, I don't think you could do a main event title push with JC Jane.
No,
right? I think, and that's I'm saying this as a JC Jane fan. She's not ready. So like, Toxic Attractions, they've been pushing it to the moon. They've been doing it in commercial advertisements and everything. But like, I don't think it's actually really at the level of that, and they have not had the ability, not necessarily Toxic Attraction, but like also NXT, to help build up Toxic Attraction to feel like that sort of commodity.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, Dakota Kai is fantastic. Dakota Kai is going to work her ass off in this match, but she is head and shoulders above these other three, and. And you can't do something with Raquel Gonzalez just being a world beater here because we've seen that before. We saw it when she was a heel to build her up into this babyface thing. If she's not working as a babyface champion, you know, it's on them, quite frankly, because they've done everything they could for her for the most part. But man, this babyface team is way too strong.
I think what should happen is Kaylee Ray should turn on the team and join Toxic Attraction, but basically as like an inside job thing where she like claims that she's getting in with Toxic Attraction, but it's all just a double cross Toxic Attraction.
That would be
a total Kaylee Ray sort of move.
I would rather her have the deal with Dakota, because I'd love for her and Dakota to just also take the NXT tag championships if they could, because I think that'd be a strong move. Yeah, I could see that. Somebody, but I also think you're going to have LA Knight turn on his guys. So, you know, because he's the guy that would be most likely to turn if somebody's going to turn in that match. I don't want two double turns in a War Games match. In both,
well,
War
I think then matches. we need to turn LA Knight solidly babyface during the course of this match.
Yep. Let me speak to you. Yeah.
He just cuts promos throughout the course of the match.
Yeah, just cut promos through the match.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that, we will close the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Thank you, MyBookie, for sponsoring us. Code ROPES. Double your deposit up to $1,000. Also, bet on the Monday night game with the spread. Get your bet on week 13 given to you. You can follow me at Crap Game 13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. You can watch the show on YouTube, youtube.com/voices of wrestling. Chris has a Patreon, patreon.com/DWATG.
It's DWATG. Yes, sir. Don't worry about the government is the name of the show. We just taped it earlier today. We do the first time we've ever actually done like a live watch of, we watched a portion of Tucker Carlson's interview with Kyle Rittenhouse, for those of you interested in that. And we also actually talk a little bit more about Let's Go Brandon, if you want to hear more discourse on that subject matter. All that's available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and over at patreon.com/DWATG.
We'll be back next week with the first NXT non-takeover special preview.
War Games.
War Games.